You are listening to an entertainment program put together by a company called Financial Ineptitude. Anything said on this show is not an endorsement or professional advice. Would you really want to tell a court of law you were suing us because you thought taking financial advice from two idiots on a podcast put out by Financial Ineptitude was a good idea? Really? Clown hat, smiley face.
Well, hello and welcome, everyone. You've made it to the China Shop. Step on in. We got the doors wide open. I'm Shopkeeper Dan. With me, as always, is Kyle, creator of FinancialNeptitude.com. How are you doing today, Kyle?
I'm doing pretty good. Had a nice day trading.
Oh, fantastic. I did, too. It felt good to have a nice day for once, right?
I know, right?
Oh, hey, we got a crazy episode today. This is wild.
Yeah, this one's exciting because they reached out to us. This is the first CEO we've got on that came to us.
It came to us. Oh, we are very, very honored to have the one.
Yes.
The only James McInnes from Oddburger. How are you doing today, James?
Good, good. Thanks for having me on, guys. I'm very excited to be here.
Thanks for showing up.
Yeah.
We're afraid maybe you didn't know what you're signing up for.
I wouldn't be a very good CEO, I guess. So I try to show up for meetings these days.
So you are the founder and CEO of Oddburger, which is a plant-based fast food chain.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
In Canada, correct, right?
Yeah, we're in Canada right now. Soon to be expanding to the U.S., but yeah, we're...
I thought I saw you had a location coming up in New York. Do you know, have a time frame on that?
Yeah, we're still looking for sites there, but yeah, we're looking really hard and hopefully we'll get one soon. But I mean, the plan is to enter the U.S. market, either New York or somewhere else, but... we're going to get there as soon as we can.
Seems like California would be perfect location for you guys for that business.
For sure. Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, get a Berkeley location and you will make some money, I assure you.
Oh, yeah, no kidding.
Yeah.
Yeah, no, we gotta get out there. I mean, but you know, there's so many amazing spots to go in the States, and I think the East Coast is kind of lacking a little bit in the vegan fast food sector. So we're kind of like, well, we'll start there, and maybe we'll head out.
I'll translate that for you, Dan. He doesn't need our advice.
So is the fact that there was like kind of a hole in that industry, is that what drew you to a vegan based fast food place? How did you start your journey into Oddburger?
Oh man, yeah, it started a long time ago actually, and it didn't start in fast food. We actually started like just selling like fruits and vegetables. To be honest, I went vegan maybe like 8 years ago now. And, I saw like a lot of health benefits to that and like just felt really good. And I just decided to start kind of like this grassroots organization from like my kitchen/garage, you know. Wow. Just like in every startup, I guess. everyone starts in the garage, so I guess I'm no different. but yeah, it actually did start in my garage. And but yeah, I was running kind of like this like secret fruit club, I guess. Like not kind of like Fight Club, but
secret fruit club. I love that.
And people were really into it, actually. It was like, because I was basically connecting directly with local farmers, and we were like getting people like bulk produce, and we had a lot of people that were into juicing and like just like healthy eating, and they were like buying boxes of oranges and boxes of bananas and stuff like that. And there was this whole like subculture of like these people who were like smashing a lot of fruits and vegetables in. So I didn't, I guess I didn't really realize that subculture existed, but I guess it did. And we tapped into it, and it was kind of cool because we had like a lot of people coming out, and before I knew it, we were just, kind of outgrew my house, and we got like a warehouse, and we were doing like more of it. And then, it kind of went from there. I mean, the progression was, we did a lot of a few things in the meantime, but that's how it started.
So how did you make the leap to the fast food then from that? Because that sounds like two completely different businesses.
Yeah, you'd kind of think, right? Well, actually, so we ended up, I mean, it grew a lot, and we just had like a lot of people who were like eating. We were always like a vegan organization from day one, just because, the whole reason I started this, because I kind of went vegan, and it was like a big like life change for me, and I wanted other people to kind of like see the benefits of this kind of lifestyle. So I ended up getting like a farmer's market, and we were serving like homemade veggie burgers there, and people like really were into them. And because at the time, this is like 2015, maybe 2014, 2015, it was actually hard to find a good veggie burger at the time. And people were coming out and, shopping at our market and eating our burgers. And they're like, man, like this is, you guys make some good food. Like, you guys should, you know, do more of this. And, you know, we did. We started making meal kits and we developed a whole bunch of recipes. And we noticed that the meal kits that were most popular were ones that were like kind of like doing takes on traditional fast food. And mm-hmm. people were like really like hyped about it. So we, from there, we got a food truck, and the food truck was super popular. We actually brought the food truck to, we went to a meat festival, Ribfest 2016.
Oh, that's dangerous. That's
ballsy.
Wow.
That's ballsy.
And we were like, we're going to bring this vegan burger. which we called, it was a take on the McDonald's Big Mac, actually. But right. I called it the Big McInnes at the time. And McDonald's didn't like that too much, actually. They actually sent me a cease and desist. And they're like, you can call it whatever you want, just don't call it anything Mick.
So, oh, that's bullshit.
So anyway, we kept selling it. We were like, you know, I wasn't about to fight McDonald's with a you know, we were pro startup at the time, so I still don't want to fight them. But but anyway, so we were just like we ended up renaming it the Famous Burger later on. But so we brought this burger there, and people were just going wild for it because they'd never had like a vegan version of like a fast food classic item like that. So we ended up selling out at Ribfest, and the rib vendors were like, what is going on? Like, these vegans are taking over our festival. Like, this is totally outrageous. Like, they were so pissed. They were so pissed off. And they're, you know,
they're taking our job.
Yeah. We were like, we had like megaphones out, and we're like, you know, like, just, I mean, it was just, it was fun. It was really fun.
Awesome.
We had partnered with a local vegan charitable organization at the time, like an activist group. And they were doing all their activist stuff, which is, you know, that's always fun too. And we were doing the food. So it ended up being a great collaboration. And this kind of like kicked us off into the fast food thing. Cause mm-hmm. we're like, you know, yeah, fruits and vegetables are fun. They're exciting, but it's not like eating, you know, your favorite fast food menu item that's veganized. There's something really that connects with people. With that, obviously, otherwise we wouldn't be selling out, right? So
yeah,
we kind of just went down that road, and we ended up getting a restaurant. I closed my market, and that kind of kicked us off into fast food.
So what do you focus on when you're making a plant-based burger then? Because I think one of the things that's always thrown me off from anything vegan has always been the texture.
Yeah,
of the meat itself.
Yeah, for sure.
Or the substitute. But I think if people focus, when they focus on the texture, then I don't nearly mind it as much. It's weird. It's weird that the flavor isn't as important as the texture.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I mean, I think whenever you're looking at food, you know, it's got to kind of have it all.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I mean? Because you can have a good texture, and if the flavor sucks, you're not going to want to eat it again. I mean, at the end of the day, I'm kind of like, good food's good food.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And if you are making something that is like super mushy bean burger, like, people aren't going to love it. You know,
right,
and
right.
Vice versa, if you're making something, you know, that is super highly processed, like, say, like, you know, some of the other plant-based substitutes out there, then people are also, you know, potentially not going to feel good about eating it. You know, maybe you'll like the flavor of it, but you'll be like, I don't know, like, what's the difference between eating that burger and just a regular burger? Like, honestly, there's no difference. So there's kind of like a balance there. And I think we are really in that sort of like sweet spot where we primarily use like more natural ingredients, but we still manage to make them have like a great texture and a great flavor. And so that you really don't feel like you're missing out on anything, and you can feel good about eating it. And I think that's kind of like a secret to our success, is like, we're really in that middle ground. And the only way that we're able to do that is because we make all of our own food. So we have like a food manufacturing company now, and it's like a separate division of our business, actually. And it just focuses on the food tech and the R&D and the scaling of the manufacturing, all that kind of stuff. And it's really, that is really the heart of the business, right? Because all the food kind of comes from this manufacturing operation, and it gets distributed to our restaurants. So, I mean, that's kind of like, I couldn't agree with you more though. The texture is a huge component of it.
You mentioned the manufacturing that you guys do for your own. So is that going to slow you down when it comes to opening up new franchise locations, or do you have the capacity already built for a much larger footprint?
Yeah, I mean the cool thing I think the way that we have designed our manufacturing setup is it's designed to be a distributed manufacturing model. So traditional manufacturers, they build these really huge plants, and they have like take some years to build it. And, you know, they're massive, like monolithic sort of things. And, you know, if you want to get a veggie burger down to Texas, well, you got to ship it there. Right.
Right.
So, and that's problematic for a few reasons. And like number one, I mean, you know, being a company that cares about the environment, which is obviously we do, being plant-based and all that kind of stuff. At the same time, we want to do everything we can to be environmentally responsible and to try to like look at that distribution model. Because if you're making food here and you're shipping it 5,000 kilometers away, then you know what are you really accomplishing with that? And is there a better model? You know, so.
Excellent point.
and again, you know, and another argument sort of against the plant-based industry, people say, well, hey, you know, I'm eating my local meat and it's the chicken grew, you know, next door. And I think that's way better than shipping a plant-based burger from halfway around the world. And it's hard to argue with some of those arguments, right? Mm-hmm. So we need to be better. I think in the plant-based industry, we need to like, you know, continue to innovate. So Dan, go back to your question. Basically, our expansion model is based on creating these, they're called commissaries. And a commissary is just basically a big kitchen, right? Mm-hmm. And it's kind of like setting up a restaurant in a way, except you have no dining room and you have no customers there. But essentially, it's just a really big, huge kitchen. And the cool thing about setting up a commissary is that you can build them like quicker, they're not as expensive to build, and you can build more of them and have them sort of running all over the place. So... So our plan is to kind of use this commissary model because a lot of the equipment, now not all of it, but a lot of it we can sort of order off the shelf. There are some custom stuff that we developed as well that we bring in, but you know, a lot of it can be set up quickly and easily. And I think this is how we plan on sort of expanding quickly and, you know, going to like all these different geographic areas and that kind of stuff.
Sorry, I lost my train of thought there. I had a question lined up.
Yeah, so that's pretty much the manufacturing model, and I mean it's pretty cool.
So it sounds like your business grew organic, just like your products.
Oh, for sure.
That sounds like a tagline.
Totally.
So when did you open your first restaurant?
Okay, so we opened our first location, it'd be like the end of 2016. And at the time, it was Canada's first vegan fast food restaurant. Mm-hmm. That we opened. So that was pretty cool. And there was like a lot of excitement about it. Because again, a lot of people that had been to our food truck and had been to the festivals, they came out and we started developing the menu. A lot of it was based on the meal kits that we had created. Mm-hmm. But you know, we started, and I mean, again, we were making the food in the restaurant at the time. So we had a kitchen in the back and we just made it there.
So you started in 16 then. So obviously 2020 and now has probably been pretty trying as far as the restaurant industry goes. Like, how have you shifted your philosophy in order to still maintain a positive outlook?
Well, you know, it was really crazy because, you know, for us, and again, I mean, I guess this is a lesson in entrepreneurship. It's pretty crazy, but mm-hmm. we in 2017 or so, 2018, mm-hmm. One of our locations in London, Ontario, there was road construction and our street got like shut down. And basically you couldn't even get to a restaurant. It was like, you know, it was like you couldn't park in the street and it was like super devastating. And as a restaurant owner, you're like, man, this is like so tough. How are we going to survive this? Right? Like, this is just brutal. Revenues getting cut in half, that kind of stuff. Similar things to what happened with COVID, right? Similar type of thing. And actually, it was crazy because that experience actually got us ready for COVID. And we did a whole bunch of changes at that location so we could survive as a business. So some of those things were, for example, we put in like self-checkout kiosks because we had to figure out how to run a restaurant with one person because the labor costs would have been too high to run to run the way we were operating before. So we had to think like, man, how are we going to like, how, what are we going to do to like operate this as one person? So we spent like a ton of effort and time figuring out like, how are we going to do that? And this is where we started developing what we coin now as the smart kitchens. And their smart kitchens are basically like a largely automated kitchen. I mean, in the future, they're going to be completely automated or pretty close to it. But right now, they're largely automated. And the idea there is that, you know, you can run a restaurant with just one person. And mm-hmm. so we actually spent tons of time, tons of research and R&D and got all new equipment. We got rid of our grill. We got rid of our cashier station. We totally transformed this restaurant. We created this concept model because of this road construction. And so when we opened our location in Toronto, we already had self-checkout. We already had this new model. So when the pandemic hit, you know, it wasn't a big deal for us because we were used to running a takeout only business and running super lean.
It actually sounds like you're perfectly positioned for it.
Oh, we're totally perfectly positioned. And we were already like a takeout business, right? Whereas all these other restaurants, they had to become a takeout business, which is so hard. If you're like a standard restaurant, like if you plate something on a plate and you're like, hey, this is like $25, you know, when you put in a Carbar box, it doesn't translate very well necessarily. Right. You know what I mean? Because it's like, I'm paying $25 for this. Like the value of when you're getting something delivered, like you're just, the expectations are different. You know, you want more for less, and you know, you're not really, it's, you don't want like a fine dining experience at home. Certainly don't want to pay for it. So we were really, really well positioned for that. And during the pandemic, there was like, you know, meat shortages and all these kind of things. And the plant-based industry was kind of taken off, for a few reasons. And so we developed this really lean model, and you know, we had already, our Toronto location already was very small, like around 1,000 square feet. And so very, very little seating. And so we just took now our restaurants have no seating. They're just takeout. Right. They're just like, honestly, they're just like takeout and deliver only, super small, like less than 1,000 square feet, like super lean, super tech focused. The pandemic for us was, we did well. We actually did really well in the pandemic, even though we're a restaurant. People are like, oh, you guys must have been really tough for you guys. I'm like, not really. It was actually super easy. We just kept doing what we're doing. I mean, besides the issues with, like, you know, making sure your staff are safe and public health stuff, but there were a few adjustments, but way less than compared to other restaurants.
So are you using like the automatic burger flippers that I've seen, like kind of getting trial runs in California? Or,
well, yeah, no, actually we're developing all of our own robotics now. So we don't like, for us though, those things are okay, but they're more designed for like a traditional restaurant,
right,
where you're cooking on traditional equipment. Mm-hmm. But all of our stuff, like we don't even have a grill, for example. It goes into like this special like machine that you like just press a button on it and a burger comes out in like a minute, totally perfectly cooked. But we're looking at like actually like automating the restaurant. So it's almost like an assembly line,
right?
Where a burger will get automatically come out of a dispenser. It'll get cooked. It'll go and get garnished. It'll then get wrapped and it comes out the other side and, you know, and then goes to the customer. So the idea, I mean, the ultimate goal is like no touch food preparation, on equipment that is just built for that, built for speed. Because the robotic flippers, like they're kind of like, the idea there is to replace a person, but what we're talking about is, I think, something much more advanced than that.
What's the right term for this? How often do you get the orders right? If you're automating it like that, I imagine it's going to be a lot better.
It's the accuracy level.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, you know, like we are not there yet. These are things that are like, some of these things are still in development, you know, it's things that we're working on. So, I don't want to kind of get your hopes up and be like, hey, we're the old robots. So,
I'd be going just to see it.
Yeah. We still do have people right now. But yeah, I mean, and honestly, I think people are important still to have, you know, because the thing at the end of the day, my vision is I want our staff to be connecting with customers and to be like educators and to be like answering questions and to be out there like talking about our menu and talking about the brand and talking about our vision, instead of having our staff like behind the, like in the kitchen, like flipping burgers, like something that a robot could do. Right. Have them talking to customers, give them the communication skills and have all the soft skills, things that like, cause you gotta remember, like, I mean, for now, I mean, people are people, right?
Right.
I mean, the people walking in the door, they're human beings. Most people want some sort of interaction. You know,
well, how often do people scream at their phones for an operator?
Yeah, exactly. It's a totally good example.
Human interaction is still important.
Totally. Right. So, I mean, our goal is not to like cut out the person. It's to really make people like connect into a different role where our people are connecting with other people and make them like educators, facilitators, like brand ambassadors, that kind of stuff. Right. Not just like, you know, someone who's like something that a robot could do. So I mean, yeah, this is the vision. I mean, we're in a transition over to that state, of course. But right now, I mean, for example, like we haven't burned a burger in like 2 years, as an example. Like we haven't had one complaint of a burger that's been burnt, you know, or undercooked or overcooked or whatever, right? Because everything is programmed. You know, so it's really easy for the staff. They can just like push a button, they get it out. You know, yeah, there's still like right now, like obviously, you know, maybe a staff member forgets to put on like a tomato or something, and you can still get human error, right? And that,
right?
And that's, you know, you'll never avoid that unless we really automate that process. So I mean, that's the goal eventually, is to be this like really futuristic, you know, fast food chain of the future, where, you know, where the idea that you can get your order the same like anywhere you go. You know, mm-hmm. imagine creating a burger and saying like, hey, like I'm going to create a burger. I want it like 3.2 mils of sauce, you know, six pickles, you know, double lettuce, and you can save that under like a profile. You can get that made at any location, actually right. Identical, like the same burger. Like,
oh, that's beautiful.
Like, right.
Yeah. And yeah, that's one of the biggest things I think that I have with most places that you go out to eat, is just the repeatability. You go get a totally. Completely different experience in two different locations.
Exactly.
Or even when a different cook is
there. Right, exactly. Different cook. There's like, oh, I'm going to go this one, like a good staff, or that one has good staff. Or
I'll even ask who's working. And
right, exactly.
What's the schedule next week?
Totally. Sure, it's a real thing, because there's like, oh, there's like that one girl, like she makes it perfectly, or the one guy, you know, like they make it perfect, right? So it's kind of like... but again, I think people in the fast food industry, and I'd argue in almost every single food experience, you really want to get the same thing as you had last time. If you enjoy a meal, mm-hmm. you're just looking to get the same thing again at some point in the future, whether it's fine dining or not, whatever it is. And it's so hard to get that, because if the chef leaves, or the chef's sick, or they're having a bad day, or they forgot, or whatever, you know, and it's so hit or miss. And that is the industry, right? Mm-hmm. And as restaurant owners and operators, we're always trying to like, you know, do more training and do more like mentorship and, you know, put more quality control checks in place and that kind of stuff. And although, you know, all that stuff really does help, in the end of the day, people are people, you know, and mm-hmm. they're not perfect, and we can't expect them to be perfect. And, you know, and I think that's where the automation aspect is going to be huge for us.
I really want a smart kitchen.
Yeah, I'm so in love with the idea of being able to program the way the burger, exactly the way I like it, and then to just go in any location and be like, yeah, give me a Dan, give me my burger.
Right.
Yeah, totally. Whether and to be like, man, that's my burger. Like, that is, it's actually like, this is the burger how I want it. It's made how I want it. It's like perfect every time.
Completely consistent. That consistency is so critical to me.
Completely, whether you're in LA or New York or Paris, like you're getting that exact same experience. And I think this is why fast food is successful, mm-hmm. right? I would argue, why is McDonald's successful? Is their food like exceptional? Is there something, you know, I mean, no, at the end of the day, when you have a Big Mac,
it's cheap, it's fast, and it's repeatable.
Yeah, if you can have a Big Mac and it's going to taste the same whether you're in California or New York. Right. Mm-hmm. And that's what it's all about. It's like, you know what you're going to get when you walk in there. And same as any other, I mean, you can say the same thing for pretty much all fast food. And I think that's why fast food is successful, because people want to know that they're not going to be disappointed. Right. Mm-hmm. Like,
right.
I mean, sure, you can still get disappointed in a fast food restaurant. Like, yeah, things do happen, but it's less likely.
Well, people use fast food too, less when they crave something and more when they just don't want to make something at home.
Yeah, and you're just on the run, and you're just like, you know what you're going to get, and I know what it's going to taste.
Get something that you know, yeah, it's going to be good.
Yeah, all that, right?
It's not going to be amazing, but it's still going to be, it's going to be good enough.
Yeah, and it's going to hit the spot. It's not going to be expensive. Right. Like, you know, price point's huge too. I mean, that's a huge factor as well. So, I mean, that's another thing that I think you'll find that differentiates us from like other vegan restaurants. You know, because plant-based food is generally... people look at it and they think it's more expensive. Mm-hmm. You know, usually it's like, oh, it's kind of a specialty item. It's like, you think of the word gluten-free and automatically you think, oh, that's got to cost more. You know what I mean?
Right.
And I think plant-based also has kind of gotten that same type of reputation. Not sure why, but we, you know, again, we pretty much price match other fast food.
Well, a lot of it too, you got to think, is going to be just on how normal it is. I know you got to be careful using that word these days, but the more infrastructure you have around it, the more demand for it, the cheaper it should become.
Yes, absolutely. And it's, to be honestly, it's all about scale, right? Mm-hmm. So, you know, we make our burgers now with the same ingredients that we did before, except we have equipment that can make like thousands an hour,
right?
Instead of, instead of hand forming them or whatever, you know, and I think like at the end of the day, it's like, you know, that's how it scales, right? You need to scale to compete. So we knew that we had to, you know, really get into that manufacturing side to compete. And you know, that's why we really focus on that.
So are there any other fast food vegan restaurants competing with you? I think the only thing I've ever seen is like, Burger King had a plant-based Whopper, short-lived. I don't think it lasted very long. I've not seen another fast food place that's completely vegan.
Yeah, like there is one in California. They're called Plant Power Fast Food. So they're one. I think they have around 10 locations or so. There's like one in UK as well called Neat Burger. There's no one really significantly in Canada here on any kind of big size. Those are some of the biggest, and they're still very small.
Right.
Relatively speaking, right? Tiny companies, just like we are. We're still in our infancy, I would say. But you know, we are really kind of now like set up to scale. And that's, we've really focused, we've taken our time to grow, and we really focused on our infrastructure, our training, our consistency, our model, so that we can really like scale quickly. And that's kind of what we're set up for now, is through our franchise model and all that kind of stuff, is to scale quickly.
Well, I think you just answered my next question, which is going to be, how do you stop yourself from growing too fast?
Yeah. I mean, you know, I think the answer to that question is important, because, you know, again, we've really, you have to be careful not to go too fast, because the problem when you go too fast is that you could all of a sudden have a really bad launch. You can have a bad restaurant. You can start getting a bad reputation. You can, you know what I mean? Now you have to go back and fix it, and you have to fix it anyway. And I've seen this with other chains. I've seen other chains grow too fast, too quick. And they don't have the proper management structure in place, and all the team in place. They don't have the processes in place, so much that, and that stuff just takes time, you know, and you can't just snap your fingers and make that overnight. So, you know, again, we've really tried to pace our growth, because the demand is there. You know, like we could put up 1,000 locations across North America, no problem. Mm-hmm. Like the demand is there. But, you know, the question is like, you know, can you do that and not fail and not totally screw it up, right? Like,
right.
With all of a sudden now we can't supply the restaurants, or all of a sudden, you know, you have really bad quality and you don't know why, and you don't have the systems to control it, and, you know, all that stuff. So, you know, we've really focused on like all the monitoring tools. Like, you know, we have like our restaurants are totally managed remotely. Like we have remote monitoring of every fridge and every freezer. Hmm. Just so we know that, like, hey, is the food, you know, is the food safe to eat? Right. Like, like, you know, if you have a restaurant 4,000 kilometers away, I mean, how do you know? You know, I mean, but we can look back and be like, hey, listen, like, yeah, here are the temperature sensors in that freezer for the past 2 months. You know, we know that the food has been kept at a safe temperature, and really focusing on safety and focusing on, you know, doing things right is so important. So, so yeah, I mean, on the growth side, you know, we're kind of going into, you know, high growth mode right now, you know, and we hope to stay in that mode for here on, you know, from now until eternity. So, because I think we've spent enough years sort of like figuring out the, you know, the system and that kind of stuff.
Can you mentioned the management team. Do you have can you tell us a little bit about who you've got running the key locations?
Yeah. So, I mean, so like the company started with myself and my wife, actually. So my wife, she's the co-founder. So she's the COO. Her name is Leah McInnes. And she is, you know, critical, obviously, to helping the business run efficiently, because she's like an unbelievable manager and team builder. So, So then basically, we have, you know, director of operations, and they sort of manage the operations of the store. We have a production manager, and he manages the production side. And then we have like our marketing team, and they really focus on the marketing. But other than that, you know, there's you know, lots of other financial people and our CFO and other people that are key to the business, of course. But on the operations side, basically there's a manager at each store, and then there's like an ops manager who runs like multiple stores. So that's kind of like the model. And the idea here is that that we can take this model and we can put a franchisee in this place. So a franchisee would then potentially act either as a manager or as an ops manager, where they can run multiple stores. Because our goal is to get franchisees to be able to run multiple locations. Mm-hmm. So that's why we built these five corporate stores. So we could basically know how to run a bunch of spots in different cities, geographically diverse locations easily, and be able to like show someone else how to do that, right? So so that's kind of like the sort of the corporate structure open in place.
Looks like you guys are listed on the Toronto Stock Exchange, symbol ODD.V, is that correct?
Yep. We're on the, exactly, on the...
So what was the process of getting actually listed on the exchange? Like, what did you actually have to do in order to get on there?
Well, I mean, honestly, it's probably not something I would do tomorrow again. It's it's like, if I had any hair left, I think it'd all be gone by now. But it's a, taking a company public is a crazy experience. I'll just say that. And I'm super glad we did it when we did. And I think we sort of went in. It's a combination of things, but it's timing is everything, especially in the stock market, as you know.
Right.
You can do the right thing at the wrong time. You can be the best company in the world, but if people don't want that now, and then it doesn't really matter, right? So
right.
The part of the reason that we went public was that we really 52% of the company is owned by myself and my wife. So we're founder owned and founder led organization. Right. And, that's a lot of shares, like 43 million shares or something we have, out of 82 million outstanding. So, and for us, the biggest thing was that we didn't have this like VC sort of like influence, I would call it, that a lot of other startups have. Because what you see in the other startups is that, and I think this is just, you go into the startup world, right? You get one VC, the next round you get three more, the next round you get five more, then next round you get, all of a sudden, you own 5% of the company. And although it's great, because maybe eventually that company goes public and, you have 5% of $1 billion, which is still awesome. For us, my biggest concern with doing that was that we're this like ethical mission-driven company. Mm-hmm. And I was always really worried about bringing in like this external VC control, because I had seen that before. Like in my previous company, I'd been a victim of that.
Don't want to lose your voice, basically.
You lose your company, you lose your voice, lose the vision. And someone's like, hey, why don't we just put like cheese on the menu? And maybe we'll just put a beef burger too, because get more people to come into the door. And
what if they're bringing their non-vegan friends?
Yeah. And then what? Like, what are they going to eat? Like, we'll have to bring in a beef burger. Just have one beef burger. It doesn't matter. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you're like, your mission and your vision is just gone. And then your base is just like, man, like, I thought this was a vegan company. And now you guys are like selling cheese, like total sellout. And then you just like lose it all, right? Like, what's the point if you've been doing it? You know what I mean? And I'm not saying that a VC would do that, but I'm just giving an example of like theoretically something that they could do.
Well, now it becomes possible.
Exactly, right? Yeah. Totally. Like, they're not vegan. Like, what do they care? You know what I mean? So for them, it's like, can they make money and can they get out? You know, like what's the next liquidity event that they can get the return? They only have a certain amount of time to get a return, right? Mm-hmm. So for us, we're in this for the long run. Like I'm like never selling my shares. Like we're in this forever, right? So for us, like there is no end game. This is it, right? So like we're not just trying to like, make the value go up so we can cash out so I can go buy like,
not trying to get acquired by another company or
and just so we can go and buy like a Lamborghini and a big house. Like that stuff doesn't matter to me. Or my wife, right? So we're entirely like mission driven and
that's awesome.
Out to make a change, right? Because honestly, like what's life about? What's it all about anyway, right? So Lambos this and- yeah, I mean, for some people it is. Not judging, but maybe I'll rent one sometime, but I mean, it's kind of like it's not about that, right? And I think these days, like people are just so sick of seeing like people just sell out and people just like the hypocrisy and like all this kind of stuff. And it is maddening a little bit, right? So we really wanted to, be that like that public company that is different. And I think we are. I think people that know who we are and know who we are know that we are different. And we wanted to be supported directly by the people, right? Like, and when you're a public company, anyone can invest in you anytime. Mm-hmm. Like someone can just go buy your company tomorrow. You don't have to go and do like a private placement, or after, you don't have to do like, you don't have to be like an accredited investor. You don't have to be like all these things. Right. So we all of a sudden we make ourselves completely accessible to anyone that wants to believe in our vision from anywhere in the world, which is what I love about being a public company. Like that to me is what it's all about, is that if you believe in what we're doing and you think it's the future in what we're doing and our vision, you can invest. Doesn't even matter if you tried our food. Right. So, so this is what's so cool about it. And you take that control away from those, you know, the big VC conglomerates and all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I'm not saying they're bad. I'm not saying they're not right for somebody. They're just not right for us. That's all.
Are you ready for a tough question?
Sure.
One of the things that seems to plague like the smaller startup companies is liquidity inducing events such as like cash raises. Mm-hmm. How is your finances looking for like the foreseeable future? And do you anticipate having to sell company shares in order to do any fundraising in the future?
Yeah, I mean, I guess, I guess I can start with this. So we had a record sales month last month, right? In October, which we announced, which is awesome. Like blew our, we almost did as much revenue, I think, as we did in the previous quarter. So, there's some crazy growth, obviously, with what we're doing. So I'm happy about that. But you know, I mean, I guess generally speaking, my goal is to never, you know, try to dilute shareholders, right? Because I'm the biggest one and I'm going to suffer the most, right? Yeah. So it's like, I don't want to do that. I'm in it along with everyone else, right? But at the same time, you know, we are still considered in many ways a startup. Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, we're on venture exchange. We are a venture company. It's meant for smaller companies that are kind of up and coming. So, you know, is it possible that at some point in the future we're going to issue shares and do a capital raise? Sure. You know, that's lots of companies do that in the public space. Do we want to do that? No, of course not. You know, we are focused on making our company profitable, right? And reducing as much as possible our need for liquidity events. Right. So, because really, I mean, we want to fund our company completely by our revenue growth. And the great thing about franchising, you know, is that we can accomplish that in many ways, that growth without significant capital contributions, because the franchisees are funding that growth.
Yeah.
They're basically, you know, and the cool thing too, in Canada anyway, is that there is, we just launched a new program actually with a big bank here in Canada, CIBC, is that we can, through this partnership, we can finance up to 90% of the build out cost of our franchise. So, which is pretty cool. You got to think like, wow, I can start a restaurant for 10%.
Whoa.
And it's a government backed loan on top of it to boot.
Wow.
So, if you default, the government is basically taking, is securing the most of those funds without any personal liability or minimal personal liability. So, so that is really cool. So, I hope that answers your question.
There's been a few that we've been asked to talk about where I go and pull up their financials and I see that they've been issuing shares every quarter for like the last year
for sure.
Or 2 years. I don't want to talk about these guys.
Yeah.
Is it another plant-based company by chance?
No. Yeah. It's just before we were getting people reaching out to us when we had to try to find people to interview or companies to talk about. I'm not doing that.
Yeah, for sure.
Because we have the same kind of vision for our show as you do for your company. Like we want to be honest with, you know, everything that we do and everything that we look at. And, you know, that's one of the most important things that drives, you know, the creation of this content. So
totally.
We don't want to talk to anybody and be disingenuous about it either.
Yeah. Yeah. 100%. Exactly. No, I agree. And I think it's so important, especially, you know, running a public company, having investors that are, you know, believing in your vision, is like, you have to have that honesty, right? Mm-hmm. And you have to communicate that, you know, to your investors. Cause at the end of the day, like everyone understands, like things aren't going to go perfect all the time. Like there's going to be hiccups. There's going to be setbacks. It's okay to have that. Right?
Right.
I think as long as you have like a solid team and you have like people that are doing the right things and, you know, people that are like spending money wisely and making good decisions and doing, you know, like pushing the company forward in a good path. Mm-hmm. Right. I think that's all as an investor, like what more can you ask for? Right. I think of as a management team, if we're executing and we're performing and, you know, we're overcoming those obstacles and we're admitting our mistakes and just owning them. I think that's super important.
Well, I think you're off to a great start already getting through the COVID era.
Yeah. I mean, it's been crazy, definitely a crazy time to launch a restaurant, a publicly traded restaurant. But I think, you know, I guess, you know, our success just is a testament to our model. Right. So,
yeah, I think you got a great model there. Yeah.
Not only that, but I think like being able to take an experience from 3 years ago and be able to learn and improve and set yourself, I mean, people call you lucky for changing your structure the way you did in order to kind of be in the position that you were when COVID hit. But I disagree with that. I think
it's forward thinking.
You took a situation that happened. You came up with a plan to make sure that didn't happen again because you were thinking that way rather than just trying to limp your way through it.
Totally.
You're able to come out on top.
Yeah. And I think as entrepreneurs, it's kind of what we do. Like you look at something and it's like, man, I can't believe this happened. This is just a brutal thing that's happening. Like why am I in this situation? And as good entrepreneurs, you know, real entrepreneurs, you should be able to take all these things and look at them as a growth opportunity. Because in the end of the day, if we didn't have it was a hard, tough year when that road was closed. But if we didn't have that experience, we would not have grown the way we did. And we would not have focused on the technology at the time when we did.
Right.
You know what I mean? And that it's, if things go smooth and everything's great, then you don't change. It doesn't create change, right? Like we only change something when we have to or when we need to, right? Like, so it's kind of like, I always view these setbacks as a real opportunity to like grow and learn and evolve and like make it better and make us stronger and make us more resilient. You know, and I think that's just how entrepreneurs think. And, you know, I mean, other people, you know, that don't have that skill set, those things can make them fail. Right. Mm-hmm.
Well said. So moving on to the plan then for the future.
Yeah.
20 locations next year is the plan. You mentioned New York as one of the possible places. Are there any other areas that are on your radar that you're trying to get into?
Well, as I said, like we're still looking for a spot in New York. But that being said, we're also looking at other spots in the States. We've been looking in Michigan. We've been looking in LA. We've been looking in Chicago. We're looking in Seattle. We've been talking to lots of US franchisees as well, potential franchisees. So right now, what we're doing is we're getting ourselves ready for like a big US franchising initiative, big US franchising push. So our legal documents are getting prepared and that kind of stuff. We're going to be registering in some states and we're going to be doing a big franchise push. But in Canada right now, you know, we have a ton of franchising interest. Mm-hmm. We are, you know, we have more franchisees coming. We're in Calgary. We have a spot in Calgary, a franchise in Calgary. We have another one we announced in Ottawa. And as I said, we have more coming. So we also have, you know, three more sites in Ontario under development. So I think right now we're up to around 11 or 12 sites that are either operational or in under development. So the goal here is to get us, you know, 8 or 9 more sites, franchisees set up for next year. Mm-hmm. And, you know, from that base, and hopefully the goal is to have one of those, at least one of those in the US market. And from that, you know, really the next year, just push it like crazy through a franchising model and just, you know, take this thing everywhere.
That sounds exciting.
Yeah.
I got a quick question about Calgary. Is Calgary basically like the Texas of Canada or?
Yes. Okay, exactly. That's what I thought.
I just wanted to pick that up. That's something that's been gnawing at me all day.
But anyway, you know, I guess we're used to from going to Ribfest, you know, it's like we're used to being around that. In fact, you know, it was funny because like we were so successful at that one Ribfest is we ended up having all the other Ribfests in Ontario like reach out to us and like beg us to come to their Rib Festival too.
Really?
And it was mind blowing. It's like here they are like running a celebration of literally killing animals, right? Celebrating the slaughter of thousands of animals.
It's the antithesis of your corporate mission.
Right. Right. And they're like, please, please come to our festival and help us veganize it. It's like mind blowing. And, you know, we did. We ended up going to a bunch of other festivals with our food truck. But you know, it was from that where I saw it was interesting, where you end up having demand in the strangest places. Like, you don't think that would work. You don't think like a plant-based food truck at a meat festival works. But then you got to think like, yeah, sure. There's like
the fact that it does work makes me all the more excited to see where your company goes.
Yeah, totally, right? Because if you can succeed there, like, yeah, you right. can succeed anywhere, right? So for us, like, going to Texas and going to those places, like, I know there's huge demand there. I just know it.
If you can make it in Texas, you can make it anywhere.
Exactly. Right?
I haven't tried an Odd Burger. It's added to my list of something I have to try. But when I was on your website looking at your plant protein guide, and is it pronounced seitan?
Seitan, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, there's a Chinese place in Tucson that has seitan meat. Like, it's a veggie option, but it's beef and broccoli, and I can't tell the fucking difference.
Oh, cool!
I just cannot tell the difference. Like, yeah, I even went and got two of them and closed my eyes, and I couldn't tell which plate I was being fed.
Really?
It's an amazing protein because it's also so natural. Which is what I love about it. Like, when you are so basically the core of seitan is a substance called vital wheat gluten. And basically what you do is you take like wheat, like flour, right? Mm-hmm. And you wash out all of the starch. You basically just like it's essentially just washing it. And in fact, you can do it at home. Like, you can take flour and put it in. There's some TikTok videos up there you can check out. But basically, you take a flour, you just wash it, keep washing, keep rinsing it out, and you form this ball. And if you keep like rinsing the ball, eventually all the starch gets out until the water goes almost clear. And eventually, what you're left with is just the protein, basically. Mm-hmm. So it's like it's a super natural it's a very natural protein, right? And it's what I love about it. And, you know, the things that you can make with the versatility is incredible. Like, we do everything from breakfast sausages to like chicken to, you know, burgers, like everything in between. It's kind of like a core thing for us, but, and it goes back like thousands of years. It's like, this is like nothing new. So
yeah,
the Chinese figured this out a long time ago. So well, I guess we're just... We're just like, discovering it or whatever.
I tried to ask them how they made it, and they didn't know what the hell I was trying to ask them.
Yeah.
Sounds like you just got to go to TikTok.
It's like, what's in the fake meat? And they're like, it's fake meat. I'm like, but what's in it? Like, fake meat. That's what's in it. Ancient fake meat. Don't you know?
Ancient Chinese fake meat.
Yeah, yeah, totally. That's funny.
Oh, fantastic.
Well, Dan, I'm out of questions. You got anything else for our guest?
Well, yeah, that was it. I just want to talk about the types of meat and express my very sincere interest to munch on one of their preposterous patties, or the famous burger.
So they need one in Tucson for you then?
For me? I don't know if it would do... Yeah, you know what? There are probably some places in Tucson.
I bet it would do really well in Tucson. Yeah.
James, we got to start a franchise with you. We got to make that happen.
Done. Let's do it. Well, and you know the thing is, like I guess the easiest way of describing our menu is like, or I guess success is like, when you bite into our famous burger, right? When you bite into it, or you take a bite of our fries supreme or whatever, what it does, and this is how it does the same thing for me, or what, this is how I know we have the right taste or flavor, is that it immediately brings me back to like a childhood experience or experience, you know, that I had as a teenager, like eating fast food. Because I mean, personally, I didn't eat a lot of fast food when I was an official adult, I guess, you know, so I just, I kind of like, for whatever reason, I was like, I don't, you know, and this is before, you know, when I was eating meat, I still didn't eat a lot of fast food. Just kind of like, I don't know, it was just like, I didn't like how it was super processed. Just, I don't know, just trying to like, I guess, be a responsible adult. Let's call it that. Yeah. But you know, the thing is, like, we still, in the back of our minds, and we still have those connections to those flavors, right? Mm-hmm. And what the crazy thing is, like, when you don't have that for like 10 years, and all of a sudden you have it again and you can eat it, you're like, oh man, like, I'm going to eat this, and I don't have to feel bad about eating it. I could just like enjoy the flavor again. it is so liberating, that experience, because you're like, man, I have not had this in so many years, and this is even better than I remember it, you know? And there's something crazy about giving yourself permission to basically eat unlimited fast food. Like, it's just it's a crazy liberating experience. It's just like, you feel like free again. You know what I mean? Like, because we're so used to like shaming ourselves and guilting ourselves. Like, oh man, I disappointed myself today. I just like, I went to, you know, fast food restaurant XYZ. And I just like, I don't know, I feel like crap. And I just like disappointed. I'm gonna make it up tomorrow and eat better. I'll have a salad for lunch or something. You know what I mean? Like, and when you take that away, all of a sudden you become this free person again, right? Mm-hmm. Because we put ourselves in these shackles of like, you know, health shackles. Cause I mean, I don't know. I feel like as you get older, like health becomes more important, you know. It's just like when you're a teenager, you'll eat anything, right? Who cares? Right. But well, as you get older, you're like, man, like I'm going to get fat if I keep eating this. You know what I mean? Like, not that there's anything wrong with that, but it's just that, you know, from a health point of view, you know, it's, there's, you know, I mean, there's issues with that. Right. So I think like, if what really we're kind of offering is that idea that, you know, you can sort of like, you know, have that indulgent experience and feel good about it. And I don't think any other fast food chain is really doing that. And I think there's certain chains that tap into that a little bit, but not in the same way of nostalgia. Right. Mm-hmm. Like, yeah, like, you know, sure, you can go to like Chipotle and have like a burrito and yeah, it's healthier, but you don't, there's nothing nostalgic about that. You know what I mean? There's nothing like that brings you back to your childhood. But, you know, but when you have so many items from a menu, anywhere from like milkshakes to like hot fudge sundaes to like breakfast sandwiches to, you know, I mean, even, and you have those kind of experiences, you're like, man, like this is like something that is totally unique in the world, which is kind of what Oddburger is. And why I think that we're going to be so successful and that this is going to be like this, you know, very big chain that will, I think will be like kind of like that fast food revolution. Cause it's like fast food in this new dimension. You know what I mean? So
mm-hmm. I love it. I gotta say,
I'm looking at the vegan French fries and I can't tell the difference just looking at the picture.
Yeah, no, totally.
I'm just kidding. Yeah. No, the rest of the food looks really good. Oh.
The vegan fries, yes.
Folks, if this vision speaks to you, the stock ticker is ODDAF. I'm assuming is odd as fuck. Is that what it stands for?
That's exactly what it stands for. I was wondering if the exchange was going to like allow us to name it that. But
you really did that? That is...
It's intentional, really, yeah.
Oh, that's awesome.
That actually was intentional.
That's hilarious. Oh, I love it.
And I was like, because the thing is, our ticker had to end with F because we're like a foreign company, mm-hmm. I guess. So I'm like, I mean, of course, we're odd as fuck, right? Obviously.
Yeah.
We're obviously odd. Like, so to me, it makes sense. And
vegan ribs at a rib festival? That's odd as fuck.
Exactly.
Yeah. Yes. Totally.
It is. So we got the thumbs up from the exchange, so I guess they didn't notice, but
They're probably too stuffy.
Yeah exactly. They probably didn't see it coming. So
all right, James, remind us where everyone can find you, websites, anything else you want to share with the listeners before we go?
Yeah, like, I mean, obviously check our website, globally local, oddburger.com. We were called globally local, actually. I forgot to mention that. But we're oddburger.com, and you can also find us on Instagram at oddburgerfastfood. And then obviously if you want franchising info, that's all on our website as well. So
Twitter,
definitely just check it out. We're on Twitter too. Yeah.
So. All right. Awesome. So we'll make sure we have links to all that stuff in the episode description in case anybody didn't quite catch all that.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, for sure. We'll send over those links to you.
All right. Well, thank you so much for joining us today, James. This has been a great conversation. And I got to say, I really feel like your business model is a game changer. You're marching towards the future. And I got to say, well, job well done.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Thanks, guys. Appreciate it. We're doing the best we can to make those changes. So hopefully,
as a meat eater, I'm interested in checking this out.
Hey, that's success. That's all we can ask for.
All right, folks. Thanks for sticking with us to the end. Check out those links in the description. Thanks again to James. And until next time, happy trades.
Bye.
Two Bulls in a China Shop is an entertainment program, and all thoughts and opinions expressed in the show belong to the hosts and not of any company. They are not intended to provide specific advice or recommendations for any individual or on any specific security or investment product. It is only intended to provide entertainment about stocks and the financial industry of trading. If you make trades based on what you hear in this show, you assume all risks for those trades.